I'm Earl Ingram, the morning show host of the Earl Ingram Show at 540 AM WAUK, and I'm here to talk about a great new restaurant, Brunch It Up, and I'm so honored to have with me Miss Morgan Schnabel, the founder of Brunch It Up.
Hello. How you doing? I'm great, thank you, and thank you for visiting us today.
Yeah, you know, I've had an opportunity to taste the cuisine and really, really loved it. Let's talk a little bit about the idea of Brunch It Up.
Yes, so Brunch It Up is really all things quintessential breakfast and lunch. So bottomless mimosas, chicken and waffles, great Benedicts, big pancakes. If you think brunch, that's what you're going to find here. It's really that ultimate breakfast experience.
You know, the atmosphere is just perfect for a family. So it's, you don't really mind if people come in with a bunch of kids and making a lot of noise. And sometimes people don't want to bring their children because they're afraid that other people are going to be upset. That's not the case with Brunch It Up.
Absolutely. We are family friendly. Families love brunch. We have menu items specifically designed for kids. Our s'mores pancake is a child favorite. But yes, we are perfect for a girls' brunch with bottomless mimosas or a family coming in to enjoy breakfast together. There's really something for everyone.
So this is your Brookfield site. It's a wonderful, wonderful site. I mean, I love the atmosphere here, but you've got a couple others that you need to talk about as well.
We do. So our flagship location is in downtown Milwaukee. We're right on Milwaukee Street next to the Pfister. So we have a great location there, three-story building. It's about 9,000 square feet, so great for all your big parties and things like that. And then we just opened our Cedarburg location as well, right in the heart of downtown Cedarburg, and we have a rooftop there.
You know, the different breakfasts that you offer, what's the number one on the menu?
Yeah, our number one seller, no matter what we do, and we try every time we make a new menu to beat this seller, and we just can't do it. It's our chicken and waffles. Every location, every month, that is our top.
So what makes them so special, the what's in the waffle? Because chicken is chicken?
Oh, chicken is not chicken.
No?
Oh my goodness.
Okay.
We house marinate our chicken. We have our own house-made flour, and then we fry it. So it's something that we really do homemade start to finish. And then it's with waffles. We also have a house maple honey butter that comes on it and sriracha aioli, all of it house made. It's delicious.
So of all the different career paths to get involved in, why a restaurant?
Why a restaurant? We have a lot of fun at the restaurant. We always joke, you know, we're not curing cancer, we're cooking breakfast. It's fun. We get to make people's day every single day. One thing that we commonly talk about are we have an opportunity to really change the way a table's day is going. And we love that. We're cheery. We're happy. We're surrounded with yellow walls. You cannot be sad surrounded by yellow walls.
Yeah, you know, it's spacious. And the thing that I noticed about the restaurant in Brookfield especially was the fireplace that's right there in the middle of everything.
Yes, we love that. That actually was there when we got there, and we kept it because we loved it so much. It really adds something, even in summer or in winter. But we really enjoy our patio, our rooftop, outdoor dining. But truly, the cool thing about our locations is you can really have any experience that you want.
So you guys aren't done expanding. It's pretty clear that what you're doing is working, is successful.
Yes.
What are long-range plans for Brunch It Up?
Our plan is to have 100 locations in the next 10 years. So we are officially a franchise now, so we are offering our brand to owner-operators who want to have good quality of life but also own an awesome restaurant where they get to have a great culture, great staff, and great hours, if I do say so.
So I got to tell you, after having this, the sausage and biscuits and gravy was...
Well, Earl,
was
I know what you ordered.
Spectacular.
You ordered the dad bod today, and we deliver on that.
Yes, I ordered the dad bod, and I understand why. It's great. It's more food than I could eat at one setting. So the one thing you're certainly not doing is skimping on your servings.
That's for sure. That's for sure. You can take some home to your family if you want as well.
It's more than affordable. The prices are great.
Yes, we try really hard to be approachable and really, truly something for everyone.
And so you've got these chefs, and do you come up with the ideas for what the breakfasts are going to be, or do you leave that up to the masterminds?
We do have an executive chef who now designs all of our dishes. I bring ideas. Sometimes they approve them, sometimes they don't, but I do bring some ideas to the table.
So, Ms. Morgan Schnabel, what do you want to say as we get ready to wrap this up?
I would say that we are just so grateful to be in these markets, and our ultimate goal is to give the ultimate breakfast experience. So whether you're bringing your family or want a great place to go with your girlfriends, That's what we do at brunch, is really provide that ultimate experience for you.
You know we've got to find our way.
All right, good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning, G. Calvin. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Earl. It's finally Friday.
Yeah, man. And I want to say welcome to...
Who's that guy?
I wasn't even going to get to you yet. I was going to, save, but it's save the best for last. I was going to talk about Brunch It Up. So Brunch It Up, a new sponsor. But we'll talk a little bit more about Brunch It Up in the coming, days and weeks and months. But I want to welcome back who that guy.
Yeah.
Sandy Williams. How you doing, man?
Pretty good. I learned lots of things about Madagascar, like what their language is, Malagasy, and what a very, very poor country it is. It's, to the extent there are third world countries, Madagascar must be almost fourth world. It's the ninth poorest country in the world, and it's unimaginable poverty. When in the urban parts of Madagascar, it was something I couldn't even lift my phone up and take a photo of because I felt it would be disrespectful to the pain that all these people were experiencing.
It's hard to imagine an urban center in Madagascar.
Well, there really isn't one. I flew into I left Istanbul after a couple of days and flew into Antananarivo, which is the biggest city, and it is just one dilapidated, slum. Big city, there might well be fine parts of it, and I'm sure there are wealthy people who live in Madagascar milking the country for what it can. But I didn't see any of that. I just saw the poor side of the city, and the poverty there is unimaginable. We have poverty in the United States, but our poor can't imagine this poverty.
But Sandy, It certainly isn't a tourist attraction. What do they do for?
Well, the Madagascar does have a tour business, but it's all about the national parks, the lemurs, the crocodiles, the exotic birds. It's more or less like Africa. But the problem that Madagascar has is that it was a French colony, and the French kind of milked it for natural resources and didn't leave it with any sort of organization. And like many countries, the many people moved from their rural peasant life into an urban life,
right,
and found not the promise they had hoped for, but nothing. And so, the people of Madagascar eat rice three times a day. There are rice paddies all over. They don't eat beef. They eat something called zebu, and zebu is pretty good beef, but it's a working cow. They use it like an ox for many things.
The meat was tough.
No, it was okay. Pretty good. They have zebu ranches, I guess, okay, that I didn't see, but it certainly wasn't French cooking, even though it had been a French colony. The French were there for only 60 years. They were there from the 1895 till 1960. When all of the colonies were breaking up and getting their independence in the late 50s and 60s. And so that's when Madagascar broke free.
So what were the natural resources of Madagascar?
Well, that was the sad thing, then. Really. I was on a back then, all kinds of they grew things. I'm sure they had sugar plantations.
French,
and
that interests the French to come. And
Yeah. They grew sugar, I think, I'm not sure rice. I think the rice paddies replaced other products, but they also had mines. They had gold, silver.
Right.
And when I was going down a river channel, on a 4-hour river channel trip, I looked up and there was a building with razor wire all along a face. I said, "What's that?" And they said, "It's a Chinese lithium factory." So mining. So they mine. Today they do this too. But,
right.
But it's not creating the kind of economy that's be able to save this country from just extreme poverty, a poverty in which people live in urban settings without running water, plumbing, You know, it's just it's very
which is still kind of unimaginable today that anywhere in the world,
yeah,
that there are places without running water. I mean, not that there aren't poor areas, but you know, you're talking about an urban area.
This is an urban area. Where how do you get your water? Well, they dig a sort of a hole in the ground, and they get water that gathers in the hole, and then they boil it. That's how they get their water.
So the native Madagascan.
Gin.
Yeah. the native Madagascan, who is that and what?
Well, it's interesting. These were islands. So the island broke off from Africa millennia ago at a time when only alligators were resident. Crocodiles. So they have the same species of crocodiles as Africa, but everything else on the island is basically a different species version than what might exist. And the people all migrated there. So there are people there who would look to be sort of Indian. There's plenty of African blood in right. in the people there, but there's lots of other things as well.
So,
and Polynesian people. It's in the Indian Ocean, and the Indian Ocean seemed to be a place of great migration. After I was in Madagascar, I went to Mauritius. Mauritius is 65% Indian because the Indians were indentured and moved there by the British to pick.
So it's an island, not islands.
Madagascar is one island. Yep. It's got a couple of little islands, I think, possibly offshore of it. But it's basically one big island.
Would you say? How many?
30 million people.
30 million people. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a sizable.
It's a sizable nation. Oh, yeah. And it's much further south. It's offshore from Mozambique, which is just north of South Africa.
All right, we've got to go to a break. He's back. Sandy Williams is back. I'm glad he's here. 844-967-2789, and I know he's glad to be home. We miss you.
Yeah.
All right, be right back.
We got some real soul music. Is this Wagner? Richard Wagner? Oh, yeah.
That's Johann Sebastian Bach.
Uh-huh.
And and that's the Brandenburg
Concerto. Yeah.
So, you know, just not the average guy.
Very cultivated.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Sandy Williams is back, and it's good to have him back. Sandy, did you hear about LeBron James' son?
Yeah, cardiac arrest I was trying to keep up with the news as best I could while I was traveling around it. But wow, yeah. And I guess he's all right, but apparently it's not the first cardiac arrest at USC. They've got
here's what I wanted to talk about. So Elon Musk is saying, well, I think it's because he had the COVID vaccine. Sandy.
What?
Sandy, what is...
What makes Elon Musk, I wonder, a medical expert?
I mean, so here's what Elon Musk had to say, and others are saying. Elon Musk floated the possibility that the COVID vaccine played a role in USC star freshman Bronny James suffering a cardiac arrest. James, a highly touted 18-year-old son of Lakers star LeBron James, lost consciousness. Musk, the Tesla CEO who purchased Twitter for $44 billion last year and has since rebranded the company as X, tweeted Tuesday, "We cannot ascribe everything to the vaccine, but by the same token, we cannot ascribe nothing." I don't understand, Sandy. The only question is whether it is rare or common. I don't understand, Sandy, why people, especially a guy of his stature,
yeah. Well, you know,
would come out and say something crazy and stupid like that.
Yeah, I do think, you know, well, you look at the Robert Kennedy campaign and how much he talks about vaccines and the problems with vaccines. I mean, I think a lot of people in the world are troubled by the feeling that they're having these vaccines pushed upon them, that they don't understand what it's all about, that there's ever since the diphtheria autism connection process was ongoing about 30 years ago, I think there's been an increasing realization that, yeah, whenever you get something medical, there's a potential downside. And that is true. But, you know, it's a question of weighing the pluses and minuses and the benefits and the problems. And to simply raise that specter when Bronny James is, you know, goes down on the basketball court strikes me as just playing to the theater, right? It's you can say something and make a point, even though it has really maybe potentially nothing whatsoever to do with the event. So, you know, I do think that the National Health Service has some work to do to try and explain to people when and why they're getting vaccines and what vaccines they need to get. And I think the medical community generally has to do a better job of deciding exactly what it is that people need to have. You know, I think America has become a place of overprescribed drugs. And so this is falling into the trap of analyzing that and now blaming everything on vaccines. So it's all a part of facts being whittled away at and becoming now a world of conspirational talk.
But am I going to listen to Elon Musk?
Well, of course, you got to bet. I mean, why in the world would we decide that a billionaire who knows all about electric cars would know all about medicine and vaccines? So that's the problem with America, though. We listen to people who have prominence, regardless of whether their prominence relates to what it is they're talking about. Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Donald Trump talked about any and all things and would claim expertise and knowledge about all things, and people listened to him.
So this thing really caught wings because Elon Musk said it, and there are a bunch of anti-vaxxers.
Yeah.
And so, well, I know maybe it was maybe.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, I had my shingles shot the other day.
Right.
And you know, you get to a point, Sandy, where you say, what's the alternative?
Well, that's the whole the whole balance of vaccines is what's the alternative? Should you get vaccinated against something that there's absolutely no likelihood you'll get without the vaccination? No. So, you know, when I was going over to Madagascar, I got vaccinated against hepatitis A. And should I have? I don't know. It was marginal. And was there a downside from it? I don't know. I didn't really check into it. There probably is, to some extent, whenever you get vaccinated, you can get a side effect.
Right, right.
It might just be your shoulder hurts, or it might be that you throw
so
up.
So what's the alternative?
Yeah.
Get hepatitis?
Well, you have to decide what's the risk. What's the risk? And so that's the whole reason for the COVID vaccinations was we didn't really, number one, understand the risk, and number two, there was a perception that it was a great potential risk, and three, our hospital system was at great risk. And so part of the reason we... Back to my music one in college.
Yeah. Symphony number one. C minor.
Brahms is very mellow. Yeah. Pleasant.
Well, it's, you know. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. Sandy Williams is back. Let's go to the phone lines and Dave from Mech One. Good morning to you, Dave. You say what?
Good morning, gentlemen. Well, good morning, gentlemen. Welcome back, Sandy. Nice to have you back in the chair there. in regards with Elon Musk, all he did was he's bringing up a possibility. He didn't say it's definitive, but he's bringing up the possibility. And I will point out, if Calvin wants to bring this up, the American Heart Association actually talks about it. It was from September 6th of 2022, where the COVID-19 booster is rare, but it's highest among teen and boys and young men.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not like that. This is not something. And my former alma mater, University of Minnesota, also talks about it from April 21st of 2022.
No, I think so you're absolutely right. There was myelitis, inflammation of the heart lining, which was much more common in young men, and they were concerned about young male athletes, and so it is altogether a possibility. My only surprise is that Elon Musk would want to dip his toe into it to just get publicity about his own view of things, but I wouldn't dismiss the possibility that vaccines had been potentially involved in it. I'm just not a doctor.
Well, so LeBron James's father, Bronny James's father and mother have not said any of those things.
Well, I mean,
I guess, Sandy, everything's a possibility, right? There's a possibility that they're a little green men.
Well, I think on Mars. Like I said, I do think the National Health Service would do a much better job to be very forthcoming to the public about all of the reasons for vaccinations and to explain the public health purpose behind it as well, because lots of the public health purpose behind the COVID vaccinations was to ease the burden on hospitals, because if the hospital systems collapse, people would be dying of many things, not just COVID, but other things. And the lesson from Italy and New York City early on in the COVID was that hospital systems could collapse, and that the public health required that we probably do something about that to avoid that happening. Lessening the severity of the disease with vaccinations was therefore a public policy objective, even in spite of the fact that there might be side effects for limited numbers of people getting the vaccine. I think too many people early on in the vaccination movement were led to believe or decided to believe that they were going to get vaccinated for their own personal benefit to keep from ever getting COVID. And when that promise didn't come true, they became very skeptical about the whole thing, because I don't think the whole program was well sold in the beginning in terms of explaining why we were doing it, and that part of the reason we were doing it was patriotism as well as personal benefit.
You know.
So anyway, David, I think I'm agreeing with you. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just I am surprised when people like Elon Musk, who aren't doctors, But maybe he is, in fact, sort of a political shadow operator, and maybe he has political aspirations. So that could explain why he would talk about it.
Make one more point. I just wanted to make one more point. If you remember the Johnson & Johnson shot,
yeah,
you know that was pulled back because of the complications that some women were actually dying of blood clots.
Blood clots, right.
And granted, it was low. The risk was low. But, you know, it was still out there. And I think the conversation should be, okay, if you're young and healthy, you know, what are the benefits of this versus the risk? Because the amount of kids that are actually dying, healthy children that are actually dying from COVID, was actually, by far the smallest of any demographic. And so that's why I think there's this controversy also.
I think there again, there was an inability to properly explain. Because I think initially the notion was they would vaccinate children so they wouldn't be vectors for the disease and carry the disease to elderly people who would be at risk. And that was the discussion of it. But if you're going to get the disease anyway, but a mild version of it as a child, you still remain a vector. And so I do think that the initial analysis and the initial process for the COVID vaccination thing was faulted for a lack of knowledge, okay? We were all involved in a new thing. And I think that some of the skepticism about vaccination was warranted because, when we all did decide to get vaccinated, whether we got Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, was a chance, right? So you went in to get vaccinated. You didn't know what you were going to get vaccinated with, and it might be Johnson & Johnson. It might be Pfizer. And so that added risk to people from the Johnson & Johnson was something that was not necessarily an accepted risk. It was a blind risk.
So here's what I don't understand, Sandy. People were dying like flies. And so people looked around them and their loved ones and people just dying all over the world.
Right.
And to somehow now, and even at that point in time, point a finger at people who were on the fly, were trying to figure this out, and that they were able to come to at least a place where people could feel that maybe we're able to arrest it somewhat.
Well,
I think was worth the risk.
Oh, it was worth
and
the
that's
risk.
And that's why I got those.
Yes, but you remember at the time of the COVID vaccination process during our show, we talked about this notion that maybe it wasn't being adequately explained,
right,
as the need to protect the hospital system and sort of a patriotic act. And I do think that the government should learn from this because the result of not doing a particularly good job up front is the skepticism that remains after the fact because people felt like they were had, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, so I just think that our government has a lot to learn about transparency and not treating people with some cynicism.
Hey Sandy, strange that you say that our government has a lot to learn about transparency. Here's a subject while you're talking about the government and transparency. Come on, computer, start working. Here it is. So you heard about the Oppenheimer movie.
Yes.
Nuclear tests.
Yes.
And Senate votes to compensate victims of the Oppenheimer nuclear tests. Our government being open.
Mm-hmm.
We know it has never been open.
Right.
About certain things. And so a bipartisan effort seeks to provide health care benefits and compensation to communities impacted by the tests of the first atomic nuclear bomb. Now, this was some time ago, but so many people have been impacted over decades by the fallout from that those tests.
You're really testing, yeah.
And now they're looking to compensate them. Our government has never been forthright in certain instances.
I think that lack of forthrightness, which leads to cynicism about our government, which leads to the concept that maybe there's a deep state because our government doesn't tell us everything, and why is the government an entity unto itself, i.e. a deep state?
Right.
All of that is getting more prominence today because the accumulation over our lifetimes, particularly the baby boomers, you know, starting with the eye-opening impact of the Vietnam conflict, and the assassinations of the 60s, and the sense that there must be some kind of a conspiracy behind these assassinations, and then finding out that Vietnam was based on many lies, or at least what we were being told, I think has government transparency is very important, and it's not just important day to day, it's important for the legacy that it leaves. And the legacy of decades of secrecy and non-transparency, of adventures in South America led by the CIA, of the Mossadegh kind of the crimes in Iran in 1953, overturning the Mossadegh election, for what reason? All of this stuff accumulates and develops in us a cynicism that for some people turns into just an anti-government kind of a sense that can fuel things like, for instance, the Trump movement. It also could fuel the progressive movement of Bernie Sanders. So there was a time when Sanders was running for the nomination in 2016 when people were saying, and maybe now I realize that it was credibly so, that there was a great deal of similarity between the Trump movement, anti sort of establishment movement, and the Bernie Sanders progressive anti-establishment movement, and that many people could have voted in either one of those camps, and maybe many of them did, because of this disillusionment with the government as it had been being presented to us over decades.
You know, Sandy, you're never going to get me to agree that our nation has not done some things, reprehensible things, and continue to do some reprehensible things in our name.
Right.
That we don't know anything about. And that, you know, going on as we speak today, all these different wars that we're engaged and involved in,
yeah,
that the news outlets aren't talking about.
Yeah, I mean,
don't have troops there.
Well, maybe we do because a young man I was coaching in Crewe who went into ROTC and then into the National Guard just got deployed to Qatar. Okay, and the Qatar deployment is getting him paid as if he was in a war zone. And Syria is a place where we, in fact, apparently do have active troops involved.
We've got active troops in many different arenas.
Yeah, so, I mean, the fact is that what we do in the government and what we as the people know is that it's an opaque glass between us. It's not transparent.
Do you think the people really want to know? I think that the majority of the American people don't want to know what our government does. And because if they did know, it would take some faith away from what we say we are. You know, Sandy, when we talk about the kinds of things, there is a shadow government. Let's be honest. But anybody who thinks that they're not, and those of us who know that there is, it threatens people and their one vote and one nation and their belief
that our
vote, mm-hmm, right? And the people we elect are the people who are in fact running everything.
But we do now have a movement that is anti-government, that wants to upset and unseat and dismantle the existing government in the name of American patriotism. Okay, and that movement is led by
Trump and...
Yes.
Yeah, but...
Yes, but because he's touching the pulse of the people who are disaffected by all of what we're talking about and who, however, think that the real America needs to be resurrected. And what that real America is an uncertain...
Sandy, if he hadn't been president of the United States before,
uh-huh,
he understands he was there. Okay, and so he, some of the things that he's being critical of, he was in support of when he was the president of the United States. So that's why when I hear, you know, people say, well, Trump wants to undo these things. Hey, he was there. And some of those things that he's complaining about now, he was a part of.
Well, he liked the ability to pull the levers of government, and the secret ones are a lot of fun to pull, probably, while you're president.
All right, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. You can join the conversation. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. And you know, Sandy, what all of this kind of leads up to, and you've been saying it, and it's a mistrust of the government. And throughout the history of this nation, you can point at things and reasons why, you know, we could say that you could understand why people say you can't trust the government. And the real problem with that is, Sandy, is when you send your sons and daughters overseas to fight and lose their lives, and it's said to be because of democracy.
Well, you know, I think each of our parents, at least those of us who had the lucky enough to have parents who wanted to raise us well, would tell us that we should never lie, because as long as you tell the truth, people will trust you.
Right.
But once you tell a lie, they will never trust you, right? And so that a lie is like a fundamentally important piece of currency.
Does that include Donald Trump?
Yeah, well, truth is a fundamental currency, and if you lie, people will no longer trust you. And the government has the same problem. You know, once the government lies to us, we put ourselves in a position of mistrusting it, or being in a position to mistrust it in every way. And the more it happens, the more it is that we'd become cynical about what it is we're told and what we hear, what we're asked to do as American citizens, and why. And so, that's why I brought up earlier about the government has a lot to learn about transparency and honesty, because I think our government failed to heed the advice that our parents gave each of us, and so we've become very cynical. And the fact that we've been lied to by government so much sort of conditioned us to be willing to be lied to by Donald Trump. What's the difference? Everyone lies in politics, and he's just gilding the lily, or whatever people want to think of it as, because we've lost truth as a currency in our public civic lives.
You know, Sandy has well said, because truth has fallen in the street and equity cannot enter, because those of us who've been around a little while, I've seen too many times.
Sure.
That this has not worked out.
And the fact that we don't trust our government has added fuel. So, for instance, the indictments of Donald Trump, those who are critical of Donald Trump view those indictments as indictments of Donald Trump.
An assault on him.
Well, no. The people who are now reside on the side that are critical of Donald Trump view those indictments as justified acts of the legal process. Those who are skeptical about government and think that government is not an honest broker believe that these indictments are further proof to them that the establishment, the government establishment, is a dishonest organization that is trying to have its way, and they're trying to have their way with Donald Trump. And so when you create this condition where skepticism is rampant in all directions, government loses its grip, and I fear very much that we're getting to the ragged edge of lawlessness because governments implement laws.
So,
and we've come to the point where everyone is being kind of suggesting to themselves that all they need to do is abide by the laws that they agree with that are inherently consistent with their view of what the government ought to do.
So, Sandy, let's delve a little deeper into that theory then, because the 2024 elections are on the horizon. And many of us don't trust our government. And there's many reasons why, if we open our eyes, that we don't trust our government. Number one, it's for sale. And when you know that the government is for sale, and yet you want to believe in our democracy, you want to believe in the flag, all of these things that you have been taught as a young person all of your life, and this represented the greatness of our nation that separated us from all the other nations on earth. And now you wake up and you find out, hey, this is what's happening. And now you tell me the power of my vote. And I believed in that all of this time, and all of a sudden, Sandy, I find out, hey, it's really.
Well, over time.
Like Tom says, we the people are the government.
Yeah.
Well.
Over decades, Tom, like the rest of us, right. And particularly since Citizens United, but even before that, we all understood that we elected people to Congress and the Senate. They ran on platforms and talked about the things they were going to accomplish. They talked to us in platitudes about how they were going to bring jobs to the inner city, how they were going to do this, how they were going to do that. And when they got elected, what happened? Well, almost nothing, apparently. And behind the scenes, all kinds of things that benefited Big Pharma or benefited private interests. So K Street got its way, but that never grabbed headlines. That was just the way people feathered their nests. But as far as delivering on those platforms, paralysis in our government has persisted for decades, and nothing is delivered. And so are we skeptical? Yes, I would guess that Americans, regardless of what side of the aisle they sit on, have become skeptics about government. They want government to be different than it currently is. You know, Joe Biden's administration is doing a bunch of fairly good things, but I think people still have this inherent problem with their sense of government and a sense of fundamental change. And anyway, Joe Biden isn't going to be an 82-year-old guy that, you know, everyone who's asked on both sides of the aisle would say, yeah, but, well, maybe Biden's doing a good job, but can't he replace himself with somebody younger, better, more vital, you know? And so it just doesn't seem that the political process responds to us. And if that's the case, we have a problem.
It's well said, Sandy. And listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. So sad.